doing, Met fan? Welcome to a postseason edition of the Terry Collins Show, presented by Tunnel to Tower, supporting America's greatest heroes. Donate just $11 per month by going to t2t.org. That's T, the number 2, T.org. I'm John Arezzi, and joining me direct from his home in Florida, the last man to take the New York Mets to the World Series back in 2015, their former manager, current analyst for SNY's Baseball Night in New York, Terry Collins. Terry, how you doing today down there?
I'm doing fine right now, John. It's great to have the show going. We got some fun guests today, but I want to get it in before that hurricane hits so I can get my shutters up.
Yeah, you got Hurricane Milton bearing down on Florida, and we just have sent our prayers out to everybody down there. Terry, stay safe. We do have a lot of baseball to talk about, but I know you know, that weather down there and those hurricanes are coming more frequently than ever before. So just stay safe down there. But let's get into our baseball talk. We're going to have some special guests today. I know you're bringing on a former postseason hero for the New York Yankees. So tell us who you got today for talking with TC.
Yeah, you know, I did that race last week for Tunnels and Towers, and I ran into a guy when the race was over that I used to play for me, who I thought was one of the best postseason players in baseball. His name's Jim Leyritz, one of the great Yankee players. Hit some of the biggest hits ever in the postseason for the Yankees. And Jim played for me in Anaheim. Fun guy. Great storyteller, and I thought it'd be fun to have him on during the playoffs.
Well, yeah, it's going to be great to talk to him. What a hero he was for the New York Yankees. But, Terry, let's start the lead off and bring on to discuss this amazing run with the Mets. He's a man who's seen it all, 1980, with the organization, head of alumni relations, and host of the Amazing Conversations with Jay Horowitz podcast. Let's bring on Jay. Well, the New York Mets have come home finally after one of, if not the most exciting 7 days in franchise history. Since our last taping, the Mets defeated the Milwaukee Brewers in the wildcard round of the National League playoffs, split the first two games of the division series in Philadelphia against the Phillies. They continue the series this week with two games at Citi Field and a game five, if necessary, back in Philadelphia. We're going to get into all of that right now with TC and our special guest, New York Mets Vice President of Alumni Relations and host of the Amazing Conversations podcast, Jay Horowitz. Gentlemen, here we go.
My pleasure, guys. My pleasure, Jay.
Well, it's great to have you on, Jay. You know, I know John's got a couple things he wants to bring up, but it's always fun to have you on. And, you know, if anybody has, you know, watched all the excitement in recent history with the New York Mets, it's been you. And I know with what's happened in the last 10 days, you got to be shaking your head saying, man, I can't believe what I'm watching. So it's great to have you on the show.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we had a lot of singular events. You know, in 86, Benny Albrighty's home run in the playoffs, Todd Pratt's home run in the playoffs, DeGrom and Dwight Gooden pitching, but never for this crazy stuff. You know, we would get behind. You're going to have a 5-run ground in the eighth or ninth inning and win. It's really incredible. This may be a bad comparison to the only thing similar, maybe not, was Daniel Murphy's run in the postseason. It was 15 when he had 7 home runs, you know, 6 straight. And every Murphy come up, he would have a home run in a key spot. But this was different guys. It was Lindor. It was Alonso. You know, it was the kid Vientos and Iglesias. It was really an amazing thing to watch, you know. And he had one game we lost. You know, we're behind a couple of times, and Vientos hit another home run. I guess we're going to win it again. And unfortunately, they came back and won. But I've never seen 7 days like this where everything, you know, we're behind, came back and won. It's incredible. It was an incredible period.
Yeah, Jay, you posted on X a few days ago, and I'm quoting here, "I've been fortunate enough to experience some nail-biting games and first-rate performances in my long, long, long career in Queens, but
another
never."
Another long in here, John. Another long, long career.
How many longs?
There's a lot of longs. A lot of longs.
You said, never, I repeat, never has there been a week like this in our history. I want to get you to expand on that for us. I want to get yours and TC's take on these past 7 days for the New York Mets. Jay, you first and then TC.
I mean, what was amazing when we beat the Phillies in the first game in the eighth inning, we had 4 hits with 0-2 counts. I mean, that just doesn't happen. You know, I mean, four hits, but all with two counts to come back and win. And we were playing the Braves. We're down to, you know, we came, they shocked us and we're losing the ninth inning. And Lindor comes up and hits a home run. I mean, and Alonso's home run, you know, I'm losing track of it against the
Brewers. Yeah.
Brewers. You know, people were speculating that could be Pete Alonso's last at bat as a Met. And we're losing 2-0 in the ninth inning. And, you know, Pete's had a great year, 34 home runs. A lot of people get on him. You know, it's not 44 home runs. But you know, what he did never happened in the history of postseason baseball to bring a team back from, you know, losing by 2 runs in a go-ahead home run tonight. It's just crazy, crazy stuff. You know, we've had a lot of stuff, you know, with Grimace and OMG and stuff like that. But I think it's just good baseball. We have a good group. I think it's a lot like our 2015 Terry. We added Clipper and Kelly Johnson and Cespedes. We just blended and we got into the game. How are we going to win this day? And that's what I think this team is a lot alike. And hopefully we can carry it, you know, get to the World Series and win the World Series this time. But to be honest, there's a lot of similarities between 15 and this team, Terry. I don't know what you think.
Well, that's exactly what I think, Jay. I've watched all the games, and you know, they have this sense right now that they can't lose. And I talked earlier with Jim Leyritz about it. You know, there was a time in 2015, and it started in when we came back in the games in Washington. But after that, when we would be behind in the game, the guys would talk in the bench about, hey, just stay with it. We're going to come back and win this game, because they truly believe they could do it. They put on better at bats late in the game. You know, they're much more selective. It was, and by the way, today, of course, we're talking about a lot of home runs, but you know, the one game the other night, it started with a walk to Lindor in Milwaukee. I mean, they got a 2-run lead, and the one thing you can't do is walk the leadoff hitter, and they walk Lindor. And I looked at, I was watching the game, and I said, this game's going to be over. Yeah. Mets going to come back and win this game, because that just showed you the kind of bats they were going to put on.
One game in Washington, I think we were losing 7-1 or something in Washington. And I think Kelly Johnson might have had a home run. Neuenhuis might have won the game. My memory's a little foggy in my old age. But
yeah.
And Cespedes comes up with a big home run. And the guys we added, Uribe and, you know, and Tyler Clippard, it was just everything mentioned. You know, it's an incredible, you know, what they've done. I think Carlos Mendoza's done a great job. Keeps an even keel, not high, not too low. When we lose a bad game, he doesn't go crazy. It's just good. You know, it's an easy team to root for, guys. Easy team to root for.
Certainly. Well, yeah, they did, you know, and what they've been saying about the team, these guys genuinely like each other. They have a great time with each other. And you know, one of the things I've really noticed, Jay, when you watch the game, the number of players who are on the rail in front of the dugout watching the game. I mean, it's like everybody is into the game. You don't see that in a lot of places. You can go watch it, look in the other dugouts. There's guys sitting against the back, and you know, but the Mets, they're right. They are all in it together. You see them talking to each other on the bench about the game. All the iPads and stuff. People, they're helping each other. It is really a fun team to watch.
The OMG thing really brought the team together. It's Iglesias, you know, Cuban immigrant, came here, might not have played much career. Bring him up in April or May. Yeah, I never seen a player have a post game concert in uniform like he did. And you know, and now the guy's hitting about .342. You know, he gets 2 hits every night. He's a big, I think he's been a really cohesive thing. He's brought everybody together. It's really, really fun to watch. And this crowd tonight is going to be electric. I have about 44,000 people, you know, cheering the Mets. And except for cheesesteaks, Philadelphia is not one of my favorite towns. So I hope we beat them.
I will tell you, there's nothing like playing exciting baseball and important baseball in any town but New York City. I mean, they are into it. Our fan base, our New York fan base, whether it's Mets or Yankees, they are intense. It is about baseball, and tonight the Phillies, they're gonna hear some noise tonight, no doubt.
If Jones, if it's a point of information, Daniel Murphy's coming up from Jacksonville tomorrow night to throw out the first pitch of Game 4. It'd be great. We could clinch it that night with Murph, a hero of 2015 playoffs, throw out the first pitch. It'd be nice.
Oh, that's cool. That's a great honor for Murph. He deserves it.
You would. I want to talk about Pete Alonso for a second and that historic home run he hit in Game 3 of the Wild Card Series. It was the top of the ninth. The Mets appeared dead. The season about to come to an end for the 2024 squad. Losing 2-0, Lindor gets the walk. Viento strikes out. Nimmo singles to right. And then, like a scene right out of a movie, Pete Alonso delivers in an at-bat that will go down in Mets history. We pulled a clip. We're going to talk about it on the other side. Let's run that clip, Marsh.
Sets. Here's the pitch. Swinging a fly ball to right field. Pretty well hit. Freelick back at the wall. He jumps. It's gone. He did it. He did it. Pete Alonso with the most memorable home run of his career. Comes as fast as he rounds second. That's a three-run homer. He's given the Mets a 3-2 lead. They all pour out of the dugout. Alonso on his way to home plate. They're waiting for him. He hits the plate. He is first congratulated by Nimmo. Hugged by Lindor. There are a dozen Mets waiting for him outside the dugout. Pete Alonso keeps this fairy tale season going with the fairy tale swing of his career.
Nothing like that. Guys, I'd like to talk to both of you, give us your impression. Talk to us about how this one game, this one at bat, this one on home run means to the Alonso legacy as a New York Met in team history.
Well, he'll never have to buy dinner in New York again, no matter what happens. And you know, people, I think, Terry, everyone, did Nimmo hit a two-run homer after that to make it 6-3, you know? But, I mean, you know what was great about the call? I mean, it's that on the plane right coming back, they played the call, Howie Rose's call on the plane, and Howie got a standing ovation from the players. And Howie, as Terry will attest to, one of the great guys to be around. He knows more about the Mets than I do. He battled back from a serious injury, a couple of years, illness. He's to see him, you know, rise to the occasion, which he always does. He's got the Mattel call for the Rangers. And he had a great call on Mike Piazza's home run, you know, and it's just really wonderful to see Howie's, you know, his call get the notice it deserves. There's not a better guy around than Howie Rose. And what it does, it makes Howie Rose's legacy even deeper. And it'll always remember what Pete Alonso for that thing. And if we were fortunate enough to go in and win a World Series here, it'll even be more magnified.
Yeah, I totally agree. First of all, Howie, you would expect nothing less out of Howie, but to create huge excitement with the way he calls a game. But, you know, in Pete's case, you know, he wants to be a Met. You know, he wants to end his career in New York. We don't know what's going to happen. Obviously, there's he's going to enter free agency, and who knows what's going to happen as far as where he may end up. But I know one thing, you know, he is such a proud guy, and he's been frustrated that he hasn't had the year that he was hoping for or that everybody expected him to have. And so for him to hit that home run just solidified the importance of what Pete meant and means to this organization. And he'll have that forever, no matter where he ends up next year, whether it's back in New York or someplace else. Well, he will be – when he walks out of an opposing dugout next year, if he does, he will get a standing ovation in New York City.
Yeah, and no matter what happened, I mean, especially if you go to the World Series and win the World Series, I mean, his legacy be even more indebted in people's mind. And they'll forget the 69 Mets, the 86 Mets, the Mookie at bat. Certain things happen that, you know, fans latch onto. This will certainly be one of those things, guys.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Let's move on to the series that the Mets are currently in with the Philadelphia Phillies, tied one game apiece, heading here to Citi Field for the next couple of games. Your thoughts so far on the first two games of this series and your predictions for the rest of the way, Phillies Mets?
Well, I want to give a shout-out to Jeremy Hefner, who Terry knows well, played for Terry. He came back with two Tommy John surgeries. He pitching coach the last 4 or 5 years. He's gotten the guys. In the beginning of the year, we're going 4 or 5 innings. All of the pitchers now go 6, 7 innings. What he said with Severino, with Manaya, Quintana, he's had to juggle the bullpen. And I think if we have Phillies are great to have Nola, Wheeler, and the lefties, but I think our pitching is going to carry us through. And right now, our lineup, 1 through 9, everybody's producing. You know, Nimmo, you know, before the at bat, you know, after Lindor's walk, Nimmo gets a big a single. You know, Vientos started in May. He's got over 30 home runs. You know, the kid Tyrone Taylor at center field. I've looked at track of what game he gets. I guess he gets a big walk in the Braves to get the guy. Help me with the pronunciation. You know, with the long name out of the game. I just think I hate to use the word team of destiny, but I think the Mets are a team of destiny. I think we have so many guys contributing. I think the crowd these next 2 days is really going to invigorate the guys. And, you know, I just hope we don't go back to Philly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will tell you, even if you go back to Philly, you know, this is an exciting series. You can't ask for, you know, in the National League to have a bigger series than Mets Phillies. I mean, it's that the passion both fan bases have, both places are electric to play. I mean, but you're right about the Mets. I think the Mets are going to win this because what you just said, you've got Jesse Winker, the day he plays, he's contributed big.
I mean,
you look the other day, you know, you've had J.D. Martinez is really struggling. He comes in the other day, they pinch hit him. What's he do? Gets an RBI single. It's just one guy after another throughout the lineup who's contributing to make this team good. Yeah, and that's dangerous. But I still went and I said it on an SNY show. It's about pitching. And what that Mets starting pitching has done in the last month is off the charts. And that's what's going to carry him, because you're going to look up. These guys are going six, seven innings in a game. Now it changes the dynamics of how you use the bullpen. So I just think I love the series. I don't care how many games it's going to go. I think the Mets are going to win, but I think it's really, really fun. It's fun for the fans to watch.
The job he's done with the staff, and you know, the bullpen's been in flux. D's been out. Pitchers have been back and forth, but he's got the right order. I really think he's deserved a lot, and really happy for him.
Yeah, you know, when you're a coach, the only thing you can ask for is that your players buy into what you're trying to teach and what you have going on. And Jeremy's solidified that kind of a job. The way he teaches, the way he goes about, what he talks about, the way he works with guys on the side, they buy it. They bought into it, and you know, we're seeing the results of it.
All right, it's all good.
The Mets have yet to win a clincher at Citi Field since the ballpark opened in 2009. They have their chance if they can get by the Phillies over the next two games. You know how crazy the fans can be, how loud they can be, but they've not seen a clincher yet. How important is it going to be for the team and the fan base to win the next two and to finally get a clincher?
I think what I hear, what I say, a lot of the players want to make this a gift to the fans. To do it here, you remember what happened in 69, you know, when we had the players. I remember
Dion
told me a story. He had to enter through the bullpen because he couldn't get out there. And in 86, they had the horses on the field. And don't forget, I mean, it won't be the World Series, but you know, we haven't won since 14, you know, 38, 39 years. I think winning at home will really invigorate the fan base. I think the guys want to give this a present to the fans to do it in front of them.
Well, TC, yeah, you totally agree with there. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think to clinch at home would be very, very special. You know, again, it's a salute to the fans, how they bought into it throughout the season. You know, we go back to May and everybody was fed up. They weren't drawn. And then all of a sudden, you know, the team stayed together and it brought the fan base together. And so to clinch at home would be extra special. But I will tell you one thing, clinch it no matter where it's at. Clinch.
Yeah, I agree as well.
We're going to change the subject a little bit here. Terry and Jay, I'm so happy that you've joined us too, because you've been so instrumental in helping with our partnership with Tunnel to Towers. And we really thank you for everything that you've done to help with the foundation and our partnership with them. Terry, a little over a week ago, you were in New York running in the 5K for Tunnel of Towers. Jay and TC, we have a clip of that run and the interview you did for Channel 5. I don't think you've seen this before, Terry. Let's go to that right now, and we'll talk about it on the other side.
All right, Terry Collins is the longest tenured manager in New York Mets history. Of course, he led the team to that memorable World Series appearance back in 2015.
All right, Terry is also a major supporter of the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. He actually ran today. How are you feeling?
Well, right now, you're running on adrenaline right now. In about 2 hours, I'll tell you, I'll be looking for you to walk me back to the hotel.
I love it. So, Terry, I know you're involved with the Tunnel to Towers Foundation, and you've been to some of their villages where they've given homes to people. What's it been like for you? What has been your experience?
Well, you know, you read about the foundation, and you kind of have an idea what they do, but when you go see it, I went to Bradenton when they broke ground for the Veterans Village and down there, and screaming hot day, there were 1,000 people there, and yet they had a family there who was going to receive one of these smart homes, and the look on their face when they walked in that door just broke your heart. I mean, just, they were just so excited, and you see so many people that are wrapped up in it, and you know, when you go around and you talk to people on the side, said, you know, I'm part of that foundation, and so it's an honor to be able to come up here today and run in this.
Great interview, TC.
Well, you know, one of the things that, you know, that I've learned about the foundation, and John has helped immensely, but, you know, it was to be a part of it, to go talk to the people who are involved in it. And what I just saw in Bradenton, just, I mean, it made you say, I want to be a member of this. And like I had, they didn't have it at the end of the interview, but I said, you know what, I told Frank Siller before the race, I said, you know, the country's divided like we haven't seen in a long time. I said, if there's one foundation that can bring this country back together, it's Tunnels to Towers. And it's almost a must to be able to say that I'm going to be a part of this, whether it's $5 a month, whether it's $11 a month, whatever you can do to aid what Frank Siller has started out doing, helping people who help us, it's a must.
I agree 100%. Hey, I did some research on it. You know, Steven Siller, right? His day off is supposed to be playing golf with his brother.
Right.
Down there, you know, ran through with his equipment and died, you know. And just, it's great to see, you know, we at the Mets are proud of what we've done for 9/11. And our motto is never, ever forget. And stuff like that helps people not to forget. You know, it's, you know, what they would do. Firemen was 343 people. You know, it's just crazy, crazy stuff that happened. It just, the stuff that Sterry did is tremendous. He will, as long as I'm with the Mets, we'll never forget the events around 9/11.
That's amazing, guys. We're going to be back with This Week in Mets History and some comments from TC and Jay right after this word from Pete Alonso for the Tunnel to Towers Foundation.
The Tunnel to Towers Foundation has made a promise to eradicate veteran homelessness across America.
They've served, they've worked really hard, and I think that what Tunnels to Towers is doing for the people vulnerable, like giving them a sense of community, that's incredibly important.
And it feels a lot like home.
Hey, I'm Pete Alonso. Let's go Mets, and let's help the Tunnel to Towers Foundation.
Go to t2t.org for more information about how your donation can make a difference.
Now it's time for This Week in Mets History, and today we focus on two postseason incidents, both at second base. One led to a fight on the field, and the other led to an opposing player becoming one of the most hated in Mets history. First, October 8th, 1973, a fight between Bud Harrelson and Pete Rose breaks out following a hard slide at second base during Game 3 of the NLCS. Let's take a look at what happened that day.
Ground ball hit down to first base. Milner has it, throws to Buddy Harrelson, one to first, double play! And a fight breaks out. A fight breaks out. Pete Rose and Buddy Harrelson, both clubs spill out of the dugouts, and a wild fight is going on. Jerry Kuzman's in the middle of the fight. Everybody is out there. Buddy Harrelson and Pete Rose got into it. Rose apparently thought that Harrelson had done something in making the double play. Rose outweighs Harrelson about 35 pounds. And now, Buzzy Capra is in a fight. Capra's in a fight out in center field. Another fight breaks out.
It's great stuff, man.
Jay, do you remember that at all? Were you
a Mets fan? I started to mention 80, but in my work with the alumni, John, Played close to a lot of guys with the 73 team, the 69 team. And John Matlock told me a story that after we won Matlock shut out the Reds in the second game, Buddy made some quotes in the papers that the Reds' offense isn't that great. Supposedly, Pete Rose took offense to what Buddy said, and that really was the impetus behind the fight, you know. But I got to know Buddy. Buddy worked for some long-time manager. Yeah. Buddy didn't back town back with anybody. And like the late Bob Murphy said, Pete Rose outweighed him about 50, 60 pounds. But it had more to do with what Buddy Harris said in the papers about, you know, how we're not scared of the Reds offense anymore.
So yeah.
John, back then, you know, you retaliated. It's a little different today. Back then, you know, here comes Pete Rose, and we know what he did to, you know, Ray Fosse. And Pete Rose is coming in second base. He's gonna go after you. And I'm sure after he tried to get Buddy, he said something, and that's what I'm sure what started that fight.
Yeah, I was at that game. I was 15 years old. I had sold a coin collection to buy tickets. And I was at all three games, and Rose came back the following day in game four and hit a game-winning home run. Yeah, and he was circling the bases, he's pumping his fist. And that's the type of guy Pete Rose was, who unfortunately we lost just a few weeks ago. But this is something a little bit closer to that you'll remember a little bit more. During game two of the NLDS in October the 10th, 2015, Dodgers second baseman Chase Utley breaks shortstop Ruben Tejada's leg after a hard slide. While Utley was initially suspended from the play, the suspension was lifted due to not being anything clear-cut to say he violated the game. While the Mets lost the game, Ruben Tejada became a symbol for the Met fans to rally behind. Let's go back to that play 9 years ago this week, and then we'll get your thoughts on the other side.
Up the middle, gloved by Murphy. There's one, and they will not get the double play. Wow, did Chase Utley go in hard at second as the tying run scores. Tejada is down. The game is tied. And now we check on Tejada. Tejada looked like a receiver coming over the middle, having his feet knocked out from under him by a defensive back. Check this out.
This was going to be a tough turn anyway. The ball behind second base, he was going to turn that way to make a throw. Utley got off on a great secondary lead, and he gets right there to break up the double play.
Didn't even start sliding till he was even with the bag. This is a play you used to see that happen a lot 30 years ago. Very rarely see it happen now. What a collision.
Utley took a shot to the face, too.
Guys, it was 9 years ago. Give us your thoughts and memories of that night.
A dirty play. Very dirty play. And I forget the first when we come back to Citi Field, and Ruben hobbled out in a dugout on crutches and got a standing ovation. You know,
dramatic.
Yeah, you know, we all know that Chase plays hard. We'll never, you know, that'll never be questioned. But, you know, in that particular place, if you looked around, you know, Ruben had a spin, and therefore there was going to be no double play. And to slide that late if you look at it, how far he was away from the bag, to me is illegal. And that was my argument, and it should have been an automatic double play. The run wouldn't have scored. Not that we would have won the game, but certainly – it went down, and I thought it was, Chase Utley played the game really, really hard, but I thought that was uncalled for.
So I remember going back to bring up Mr. Tom Hagen again. So I keep seeing a video, and after Noah threw out Chase, the people on the mound in that conference, Soup Campbell, Ty Kelly, Neil Walker, you and Noah, and Neil Walker's pleading his case. We got to get another shot. Give us a shot. You know, it was hysterical. I mean, you know, three of the most screw,
well,
Campbell and Ty Kelly on the mound. Took it back. No offense. I love both those guys. I love all my guys. But not exactly household names. And Neil was doing, yeah, we got to get a shot. We need a shot. And then probably the famous answer to what's the exact quote? Yes, in a crackpot. No,
jackpot. In the jackpot. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're never going to see it. I mean, had an incident earlier in the year with the Brewers where, you know, Reese Hoskins slid into Jeff McNeil at second base, and Jeff took offense to it. But I mean, that was not even close to what the other two slides and what has happened in the past. Because, you know, I played second base, and I'm telling you, there were certain guys. When they were coming into second base, you better get the ball and you better get rid of it and you better get off your feet because they're going to get you.
It's the best part about that series, Dodgers losing 5, Terry.
Yes, that's correct. That is correct. Best thing. Without a question.
Well, we're in a wonderful playoff situation right now that has been a long time coming, and we certainly are going to be following this. And Terry, that's all I got for Jay. And
Jay, thanks as always for coming on. And you know, it's always fun to have you on. Great to see you. Yeah. And let's go Mets.
Yes. John, let me add one more thing about Terry. People don't know, you know, the Tuttle's Tower thing is great, but even when he's managing the Mets, anything he can do for police or firemen, quietly on his side, he did dinners, raffles, bringing people out to the park. He did so much for the firefighters and the policemen in New York. Other people should know that.
Thanks, Jay.
We know. We hear from Tunnel all the time on how happy they are to be associated with Terry, and it's just been a wonderful thing. And just knowing Terry is, you know, haven't known him for a long, long time, but just to see it's genuine and he's passionate about first responders and law enforcement and military.
I see one more thing, guys, before I go. OMG.
OMG, exactly. Thank you so much, Jay.
All right. Terry, speak soon. Regards to Tim.
All right, Jay, take care.
And now it's time for Talking with TC. Our guest on this week's Talking with TC is a former Major League player whose postseason heroics for the New York Yankees are legendary. He was a member of the Yankees twice from 1990 to 1996, and then again in 1999 and 2000. He's also been a broadcaster and an author of his memoir, Catching Heat. He's involved with many charitable foundations. Let's welcome to Talkin' with TC, Jim Leritz. How you doing, Jim?
Good. How you guys doing?
We're doing great, Jim. Thanks for coming on today. It's you know, I'm glad you're in New York and not down here in Florida. This storm that we've got coming in is going to be a big one. So stay up there for a little while.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, they're getting hit hard a second time down there.
I know it. So, Jim, you know, when I talked to you, you know, when I saw you last week and we talked about coming on, one of the things that came to mind as soon as I saw you was that, you know, with what's gone on with the Mets in the last week and, you know, the big home run, the big hits, you know, nobody had a bigger hit in New York than you, what you had in Atlanta that night against the Braves. And what kind of impact do you think that home run that you hit, or the home runs that, you know, Lindor's hit, Pete's hit, Vientos's hit, Nimmo's hit, what kind of an impact, especially when you're behind in the series like you guys were, you know, what changed in that clubhouse did you see?
Well, I think number one, just, you know, the injection of confidence that you have once you break through, especially a closer like Mark Wohlers. Once you do that, it just gives the rest of the bench, the rest of the guys in that dugout, just more confidence that, hey, you know, sometimes we can beat their best. And I think that's kind of, for us, you know, that's what we knew. If we went down 3-1 in Atlanta, that there was no chance that we would win 3 in a row versus Maddox, Smoltz, and Glavine. And that's why that home run and that particular game becomes so important to the momentum. And of course, Andy Pettitte going out the next day pitching that 1-0 game. But Andy even said to me that, Terry, one of the great things that he was able to go home that night, because he was no longer pitching an elimination game, but now he was pitching a game that the series was tied up 2-2. So I think that's another thing that a lot of people lost in all of that, was he could have went home that night, not being able to get rest, not being able to sleep, because if he knew, if he pitched another bad game like he did game one, our season was over and we'd lose a World Series.
Wow, that's so, Jimmy. I'm sure you've had to answer this many times. Run through that at bat again, because if any fan has ever watched it, I mean, the battle you had with Wohlers. I mean, what was, you know, give me the thought process as you were going through that at bat.
Well, you know, Terry, you were my manager. You know, I don't think too much. You know, I don't read the reports. I don't do a whole lot of, you know, I'm a guy that does a lot by the feel. And when I wanted to face the pitcher, I didn't care about what he threw, 0-2, 1-2, what the count was. I wanted to know how hard he threw and the pitches that he had in his repertoire. That's all I wanted to know. And I remember we came in after the seventh inning, and I remember being by the bat rack, and I looked at Daryl Strawberry and said, "Straw, Zimmer just told me this guy throws 100 miles an hour. I need to get ready." I go, "I only have two bats left for tomorrow." I said, "I need to have those against Smoltz." I go, "You got a brand new box of Mizunos right here. Can I use one of yours?" And he goes, "Yeah, go ahead, use one of my bats." And so I put the pine tar on it, got ready. I walked by Zimmer again. I said, "Zim, come on, what's this guy got?" He goes, "Jimmy, he throws 100 miles an hour. Get it ready." And basically, I go to the on-deck circle. I see him throw the slider to Mariano Duncan, who hits into what should have been a double play. And then I realize, okay, he's got a fastball and a slider. Now, the great thing about not reading those reports, Terry, I never knew Mark Wohlers had a split-fingered fastball.
I didn't either. To be honest, Jim, I the only time I ever saw him pitch, I saw fastballs and sliders. I didn't see too many split fingers.
Yeah, so I completely didn't even think about that pitch. And, you know, everybody says, "Oh, were you looking slider?" And I said, "No." I said, you know, he threw me a couple of good fastballs. You know, he started me off the 98-mile-an-hour fastball. You know me, I take a hack every time. And, you know, the funny part about it was, in his interview, he said, "I threw a couple good fastballs," and he looked like he was on it. That's why he went with the slider again. But when I looked at that brand new bat that I borrowed from Strawberry, the two marks from those fastballs on my bat were right on the label. I was not getting around in that pitch. But the view looked like I was following it straight back.
Yeah, yeah.
So when he threw me the first 2-2 slider that I just barely fouled off, I moved about a half a step off the plate and said, "He's going to come in with a fastball. I'm going to take it for ball three, and then I'll get a 3-2 pitch to hit." And I think by moving off the plate a little bit, he noticed that outside opened up even more, and he thought he could get another slider out there. And he tried to throw a little better one, and he hung it, and I was able to stay with it and hit the home run.
Yeah, you know, Jimmy, that was a tremendous at bat because, if you relived it, I mean, you didn't hear it, but, you know, I've watched the replay of it since. And, you know, Tim McCarver, who was doing the game as the color guy, when he threw you the second slider, Tim McCarver said, "This is crazy. This guy throws 100 miles an hour and he's going to try to get his second or third best pitch by this guy." He said, in this situation, you got to get beat with your best stuff. And sure enough, he hung the slider again. And, you know, I always thought, I wonder if Jim thought about, you know what, he's going to try to sneak that slider by me after, you know, pumping that 98. But you just saw the pitch and hit it. I mean, that's.
Well, yeah, you know how I used to hit, you know, like I said, you managed me. I never guessed pitches. I guessed location. And there were certain times as a catcher, as a hitter, that I knew that there are certain pitches that I was not going to be able to hit in certain counts. And when he got that second strike on me and I just barely fouled that slider off, I realized that if he comes in with a fastball, I got no chance. So as a hitter, I took a half a step off and I eliminated that pitch. Anything inside, I was taking because it would be off the plate. So I eliminated that pitch and I was just looking out over the plate for something to drive. And again, I was thinking fastball.
Yeah, Jim, I you're right. I managed it. You didn't see a fastball you didn't like ever. You were,
exactly.
I mean, you were ready to hit those, but no matter where it was and who it was. But you know, that was again one of the big hits ever. Have you ever seen anything like the Mets have gone through in the last 10 days with, you know, behind in the games, eighth inning, ninth innings, and the big hits one after another. Have you ever seen anything like that before?
No, but you know what it did? It created a confidence in these guys. And then, and this is when the Mets started doing that. One of my best friends here in New York is a huge Mets fan. And we were watching the games together, and I said, if I was the National League, this would be the biggest team that I fear right now, because they're getting hot at the right time. And it's not just one guy. It's the whole team. And Terry, you know how it is. When you can get a whole team gelling, that who cares who the guy is that's the hero, but let's have a different hero every night, it creates something in the dugout that just is really special. And you could see that happening with the Mets. Even when Diaz would come in and give up a save, they didn't give up. They kept at it, you know, and it was just, it was really something good to watch. And I'm telling you right now, if I'm the Philadelphia Phillies, I am afraid, because this team, like you said, they never think they're out of it.
You know, Jim, that's, you know, and I've been, of course, watching games, but even back in 2015, I mean, there was a time in August, you know, when we got hot, we didn't think we were going to get beat. I mean, we started that game, and there were times, even on, and it's really started after the series in Washington, but there were times guys on the bench talked about it. We'd be down a couple runs, and they say, hey, you know, stay with what we're doing. We're going to come back and win this game. The confidence, and you've already talked about it, the confidence on the club that, hey, look, I don't care who's out there. You know, we're going to come back and win this game. I mean, that to me, that, and that's why, you know, you guys who were great big league players, I mean, that ability to just believe in yourself and believe in the team, you know, you can't, that's stuff that nobody can teach. You can't motivate a guy to talk about it. That is inner thought processes.
Well, and the one thing that the fans don't understand, and you know, you realize it by being in the dugout, not only does it help the dugout, it also helps that bullpen. That these guys know that if I come in right now and I shut it down, these guys are going to come back for me, and it's going to turn out. And instead of a reliever coming in going, oh, geez, you know, here we go. I'm just going to just let it go and just see what happens. No, these guys are coming in now from the bullpen going, if I can shut them down, I'm going to give my team another opportunity. So it just creates such a vibe. And I think, like I said, that's what the Mets have going right now.
You know, Jimmy, that's one thing about today's game. You know, due to the fact that no starter goes over 75 or 80 pitches, very, very seldom. I mean, as a hitter, you've got to prepare yourself now for all sorts of different looks, because you know that your next two at-bats, you're going to see two different guys. And so, you know, that's where I think today the ability, like you said, hey, look, you know, I'm going to go up there. Here's my game plan. I'm going to go, I'm going to get, I know what he's got. I know where he's going to try to get me out. And then sit on a pitch and go and look for something and say, hey, look, you know, he makes a mistake here. I'm going to, you know, that's where I'm going to do my damage. Because I watch some of these relievers coming in anymore. And I mean, you could almost dictate what they're going to throw, because it's the same pattern almost every night.
Yeah. And that's that for me. I think that's the one thing that when you can find a team that like the Mets are doing right now, playing some small ball. And you know, we always talk about it. You know, I sat there the last two nights in Yankee Stadium watching this going, it's either a strikeout or a walk. There's no more moving a runner over. There's no more getting that guy, you know, because sabermetrics says giving up an out is not beneficial. Well, I'm sorry. I watched a couple of teams in my late 90s win three or four World Series by getting Chuck Knoblauch on first. Jeter gets him over and Paul. Those are the type of things that when I watch teams in the postseason, when you're facing that number one, number two, or that great bullpen, that you need to know how to manufacture runs. And Terry, I just don't see it being enough in this game today.
Yeah, I, Jim, I totally agree. I mean, I see situations where, you know, we used to call them productive outs, you know, where, you know, hey, look, you get a guy to third base, your chances of getting him in are enhanced immensely. Yeah. You know, and we saw it the other night in the Phillies game. Got a runner at third base. It stops at third base. Somebody hits a little chopper to third. And, I mean, they got to play at home plate. The guy, you know, doesn't handle it great, and the run scores. I mean, and it just – that kind of – putting the pressure on the defense by, hey, look, put the ball in play, I just think is a huge factor in the game that's been lost.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of my biggest pet peeves. I love Anthony Volpe to death, the shortstop for the Yankees, and I think he could turn into being a great leadoff hitter, stealing bases and everything else, but he doesn't shorten his swing with two strikes. He started to at the beginning of the year, had a lot of success, but about halfway through, all of a sudden, just kind of threw that out the window because he wasn't hitting enough home runs. And I'm like, wait a minute, dude, you know, you're a prototypical guy. If you put the ball in play with your speed, you're going to put that pressure on the defense, and they're going to make mistakes. And they just don't do it, Darren. It's frustrating to watch.
So, Jimmy, what's your thoughts on a Subway World Series coming up?
You know what? It's possible. I would say right now, like I said, the Mets are playing good ball. The Yankees got rid of the Astros finally, so they don't have that hanging out there. I think they have a great opportunity. They're going to play either Cleveland or Detroit in this next series. Again, you talk about a team that's a little scary. You know, Detroit's finding a way to win. But either one of those two teams that the Yankees get the next round is kind of a favorable matchup for the Yankees. So if they can get by Kansas City, I think there's a good chance. And like I said, with the Mets, right now, the way they're playing, anything's possible.
Yeah, you know, and I watch the Yankee games, and you know their big guys got to step up. This is when really the star players really have to take control, because I've always feared that Yankee lineup, but boy, once you get past Judge and Soto, somebody's got to get hot. One of those other guys.
And you worry a little bit too, because Kansas City winning last night, going home 1-1. You know that when you're on the road, if you get a split, that's a victory. That gives you some momentum. And to win the game like they did last night, and having Bobby Witt be 0-9 or 0-10, whatever he is, not even starting to hit yet, now going back to Kansas City, I think Kansas City's going to have a lot of confidence. So this could be a couple of tough games coming up here for the Yankees to try to get to that next round.
Yeah, and it's a different game in Kansas City than playing in Yankee Stadium. There's a whole different situation. Plus, you got Seth Lugo, who's had a tremendous year. I mean, holy cow, they got their work cut out for them. And I just think it's going to be – I'm excited that the playoffs are now that they're all evened up everywhere, and it's going to make it interesting. I've always looked back, Jim. I look back at the after 15, after we swept the Cubs, and we sat for 5 days. You know what? It was always tough. You could just see every day we practice the energy level going down. Yeah. And even though we know we're going to go to the World Series, man, when you got things going and you guys are playing good, you want to be out there. I always thought.
Yeah, and anywhere outside of New York is a different animal. The New York crowds, they get you going. And that's helpful, but. It's you don't have that everywhere. And some of these teams, a young team like Kansas City that would get 3 or 4 or 5 days off, that might have more effect on them than a more veteran team. So it really depends on the makeup of the team.
Yeah, I think you're right. So, John, I know you've got some questions for Jim. Getting back on here, Jim. There he is.
There you go.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks, Terry. Jim, you were one of the most prolific postseason hitters in the history of the game, if you take a look at it. You were involved with several series-altering moments. Perhaps the greatest, as Terry discussed, was the 3-run homer in Game 4 of the 96 World Series against the Braves. Yankees won that year, their first world title since 78 at the time. What was it like for you to play such a major role in postseason history now that you can look back all these years later?
Well, I learned a very valuable lesson in 1995 when I hit the walk-off home run in Game 2 against the Seattle Mariners in the playoffs after catching all 15 innings. And Buck Showalter was my manager at that time. And, Buck came up to me in the 50th inning and said, "You're done after this. Make this at bat count." And I hit the home run. But we went up 2-0, but we ended up losing the series. So that home run just became a footnote. And everybody said when I hit the home run in 96, "You must have been floating around the bases." And I said, to be honest with you, all I could think about was it's tied the game up. If we don't win, it's another footnote. And the fact that Wade Boggs got a walk and we won the game and we went on to win the World Series, that home run was the turning point and became so much bigger in 1997. Because when the Yankees lost in 97 to the Cleveland Indians, Mariano Rivera gave up the home run to Alomar. George Steinbrenner was so ticked off. He walked into Gene Michael's office and said, get rid of Joe Torre, get rid of Mariano. This is it. We're done. And Gene Michael said, George, did you forget we won in 96? And George said, I'll give him one more year. And that was the magic year of 98. So that's why that became such a big deal, and that why that home run turned out to be one of the biggest in Yankee history.
Oh, it was, for sure. Talk to us about your approach during these situations back then, and did you want to be in those spots with these games on the line?
So I tell the story. I just told it on another interview just a couple minutes ago. A couple of days ago, I lost my idol, Pete Rose. You know, Pete and I were pretty close, and I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio. I wore number 14. I wanted to be Pete Rose. I used to go to spring training with a friend of mine named Tommy Brenneman, whose dad was the announcer, Marty Brenneman. And as a 14-year-old kid in the team hotel one time, I got a chance to talk to Pete. And I just said to him, Mr. Rose, how are you so good in the clutch? How are you so good at these big, you know, big times? And he said, Jimmy, right now in spring training, every at bat is my most important at bat. I don't care that it's spring training. I don't care if it's game one of the World Series. This at bat is the most important thing. And if I treat it like it's me against the pitcher, and that's all I'm doing, and that at bat is the most important, it doesn't matter what's going on around me. It's me against that pitcher. And he said, that's the attitude that I take no matter whether it's a practice game, whether it's spring training, or the first game of the year, or the World Series. And it was kind of what the way he prefaced it was, it's pressure only if you make it pressure. And I kind of, as a 14-year-old kid, took that to heart. And in the basketball game, I always wanted the last shot. You know, in the baseball games, I wanted to be up with runners in scoring position late in the game. I just, from that advice that he gave me, it just made me like, hey, I get that. And so for me, whether it was, you know, the first at bat of the season or in the World Series, I never got caught up in what the fans or anybody else was going on or how big that at bat was. It was just me against that pitcher. You know, Terry, I told you about my father. My father was a cross between Woody Hayes and Bobby Knight. He was a tough SOB. And he used to tell me, there's only two, because I played basketball and baseball, there's only two times you can't blame anybody else except yourself. It's when you step in the batter's box and when you're shooting a free throw. So you know what? Make that at bat be the most important thing. And that was all part of the process that I think it helped me in those clutch moments.
In addition to being a postseason hero, you were also the personal catcher for Andy Pettitte, 95, 96, 99, 2000. What was your relationship like with Andy and that bond that made that battery work so well?
Yeah, it was interesting. 1995, I used to catch Andy's bullpens. And I wasn't, Mike Stanley was the starting catcher. And you know, Andy had that, in the beginning, had that just that one little cutter that was his, one of his best pitches. And he used to throw it most of the time inside to lefties. And into righties and away from lefties. And Mike Stanley had a little bit of trouble framing that pitch. And so one of the times I was warming him up in the bullpen, he said to Mel Stoudemire, do you mind if Jimmy – no, it wasn't Mel Stoudemire. It was it was our – It might have been Mark Connors.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And anyway, he said
– Billy Connors.
Yeah. Well, Billy was the minor league guy.
Oh, okay.
But Mark was the big league guy. And he said to Mark Connors, can you talk to Buck about letting Jimmy catch me one game? And 2 days later, I was catching his start, and we threw a 3-1 game. We won. We got so many calls on that inside pitch because I knew how to frame it. And all of a sudden, the next game we started together, he had another great game. We ended up going 9-3 for the rest of 95. And in 96, they replaced with Torre. He went into Torre and said, can you let me and Jimmy still work together? And Joe Torre said, Jimmy will be your catcher as long as we're not facing a tough lefty when, like a Randy Johnson or a Mark Langston, when I need to get all the right-handed bats in the lineup, Girardi a catch and Jimmy will DH. And that only happened like two or three times during that season. And, you know, Andy went 21-7, was runner-up in the Cy Young that year. And, of course, we had the horrible game one. And then, of course, the game five, that was the 1-0 game. That was probably the best game he's ever pitched.
Wow. Let's talk about 1999. You were playing for the San Diego Padres. You were rehabbing a broken hand. And you get a call informing you that you were going to be traded to the Boston Red Sox. And that's a place you didn't want to go back to. You told the Padres as much, and they reportedly gave you a little time to work something out before they traded you. You called George Steinbrenner's office, spoke to Debbie Nicolosi over there. Take the story from there. Let us know what happened, and then give us your favorite Steinbrenner story, if you could.
Yeah, so I have a bunch of Steinbrenner stories, but yeah, so I was, you know, I had a great year in '98 with the Padres. They had an option on me for the following year. They got approval for Petco Park in November of that year. And then they traded everybody. They got rid of Steve Finley, Caminiti, Wally. Everybody left. And I was there. And I walked up to Kevin Towers in spring training. I said, dude, why didn't you trade me too? He said, I want you to work with our young pitching staff. And he goes, don't worry. By June or July, we're going to trade you to a team going to the playoffs. And I was like, okay, I'm good with that. At least I knew I was going to play a lot. And then I got hit by a pitch on June 20th by Chano Park, and I broke my hand. And it really put a damper on, okay, am I going to be healthy enough by July 31st to be traded? And sure enough, I went down. I was rehabbing in Las Vegas. Kevin Towers calls me up on July 29th and says, hey, I got a deal. I need to get somebody for you before the deadline. I think I'm going to send you back to the Red Sox. I said, no, please don't. I said, give me 24 hours. So he's like, okay, I'll give you 24 hours, but I got to get something for you. And so I made the phone call and literally 24 hours later, I was back being a New York Yankee. And I literally walked into the clubhouse and Joe Torre's like, I did not know this was happening. George did this on his own. But yeah, George was not going to let me go back to being a Red Sox, and sure enough brought me in. And as luck would have it, you know, they kept me off the roster against Boston, but then they put me back on for the World Series, and I got my one at bat, and I hit the last home run of the century in game four of that World Series. So some pretty special moments. I made the joke with Joe Torre because with the Padres, I was 0-10 against the Yankees in the World Series. And I made the joke with Joe Torre after I hit the home run. I said, Joe, just like you, the good Lord never wanted me to do anything good unless I was in Yankee pinstripes.
There you go.
Is there any Steinbrenner story that stands out to you that you could repeat above the others?
Well, I think the best one was probably when I got traded when Terry was the manager of the Angels. I hit the big home run in 96. I used to live in Tampa. I was working out at the minor league complex in Tampa. And back then we didn't have cell phones. So I got called off the field. I come into the locker room and get on the phone. And they said, and I forget who the traveling secretary was, but he said, hey, Jimmy, just want to let you know you've been traded. You're going to the Anaheim Angels. You got a 3-year deal. And that was the first multi-year deal I had ever gotten. And I hung up the phone. I was excited to be going. And I walked in with my bag packed. You know, I cleaned up my locker. I walked into Mr. Steinbrenner's office down in Tampa. And I said, Mr. Steinbrenner, I just want to thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to go play every day. And, I really appreciate it. And he looked at me. He said, listen. He said, what you've done for the Yankees has been great. He goes, why do you have your bag packed? I said, well, I'm not a Yankee anymore. I can't work out here. He said, Jimmy, go unpack your bag. As long as you want to work out here, you can work out here. And he let me work out there until I went to spring training with the Angels that year in Terry.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Great story. Got one more for you, then we'll let you go. I'll turn it back to TC after this. Your charitable work is vast. From your playing days to the present, you've been involved with many worthy causes. While with the Yankees, you brought foster children to see games at Yankee Stadium. You're on the board or served on boards of several organizations, including Wounded Warriors, the 9/11 Education Trust Foundation, the ALS Association, the Teen Project, United Breast Cancer Foundation. What makes you so passionate about your charity work? And is there one event in your life that motivated you to get involved with so many organizations?
Yeah, it was the first one you mentioned, the New Yorkers for Children, the two little boys that got adopted into a family. You know, it's one of the crazy things that, you know, how God has a hand in pretty much everything that you do. And in 1996, in June of that year, was adoption month. And my wife was, my wife was pregnant at the time with my second child. And she came into my room. I was just getting up we just got back from Seattle, a long road trip. And I was just getting up and she brought the newspaper in the New York Post. And it said, two little boys want to be adopted and have a daddy and go to a Yankee game. And she looked at me and she said, we got to do something. And I said, well, we can't be their daddy. We're just having our second kid. But we could take him to a Yankee game. And at the time, a guy named Nick Scarpetta was the head of Children's Services. And I called him up and said, Nick, you know, it's Jim Laritz. I would love to do something for these boys, bring them to a game, take them down to the locker room, let them meet the players, and bring them, make that one wish come true. I can't be their daddy, but, you know, make that wish come true. And it just snowballed into this. Mayor Giuliani got involved. Michael Kay put it on the TV that night when I brought the boys down to the locker room. They filmed them interacting with Tino Martinez and a bunch of guys and all these different things that were going on. 17 people called during the telecast to adopt the boys.
Wow.
It was an amazing experience, but this is just the beginning. So this is June. So fast forward to tonight, October 23rd, I hit the home run. I come back in the room. I'm getting interviews right and left. People are calling me in the morning. Now I've got to catch Andy Pettit for game 5. And we were out all night celebrating the home run. So I'm like, I got to get some sleep. Babe, don't wake me up. And all of a sudden the New York Post called. And it was this woman that wrote the article about these two boys. And my wife said, you got to take this call. I got on the call and the woman's name was Susan Forrest. And she said, I just want to let you know, I know you're really crazy with all the home run and everything. But yesterday, before you hit your home run, those two little boys got adopted into a family.
Wow.
And it was, for me, it put my home run in perspective that it was my biggest moment ever. But now to know that two little boys were going to wake up and have someone that says, I'm here for you every day, was pretty special. Now it gets even crazier. I know we got a time limit, but even crazier, in November of that year at their adoption, they invited us up to their adoption, my wife and I. And we came up and they had these little pendants that they gave my wife and I, and they were number 13. And they pulled down their shirts and they both had number 13. And said, we want you to know that they will always remember this. And then the little boy handed me a piece of paper and he said, Mr. Laritz, I have to ask you a favor. I want to change my name legally to Jimmy Laritz Cortez.
Wow.
You talk about being blown away. When that happened, I just knew that, you know, there's so much impact that we can have that we never expect to happen when we're just doing something out of the goodness of our heart. And so from that point on, any opportunity, any chance I had, I made sure I gave my time. And, you know, Mr. Steinbrenner also was one of those guys that, you know, he did so much behind the scenes for people that people didn't see. He instilled in us too, if you don't give back from what God has given you, it was a waste. And I will forever be thankful. You mentioned ALS. That's one of my big ones. I was personally hit by that with my brother-in-law in 2010. He lost his life to Lou Gehrig's. So that is also one of the big ones also.
Oh, we really appreciate that. That's a fabulous story, wonderful story. I'm going to turn it back to TC, and it's been a pleasure talking to you, Jim.
Oh, thanks, John.
Well, Jimmy, I got to tell you that there's no better way to end an interview than to listen to those stories right there. That captures the essence of who you are as a person, you know, which overplays the home runs. You know, it's tough. You know, to go out and play every day and be a major league athlete and, you know, all the stuff that it demands, it takes on you to go out and get ready to play, but to be able to make time to be something else besides that and touch somebody else's lives is really touching. So thanks so much for being on the show today, Jim, and I look forward to seeing you soon, and enjoy the game tonight. I know you're going to be careful wearing that New York Yankee shirt in the Citi Field, though, I'm telling you.
Yeah, so. I won't be wearing that tonight. But, hey, okay. By the way, I never got a chance to ask you, after you did your run for Tunnel for Towers, how are you feeling?
Well, next day I was a little sore, Jim. The thighs were a little sore. You know, running up that last hill coming out of that battery tunnel, it took a lot out of me. But I woke up 2 days ago, I started getting a head cold. I had a sore throat, and I said, oh, man, running in that rain and cold and standing outside talking, and I said, all right, I paid my price. I did my thing. So
exactly, but, and it's great to see you out there doing that. So I have a respect for that too. So
well, yeah, it's good to see you. Thanks for being on, and we'll do it again soon.
All right, guys, thanks so much.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Thank you, Terry. That was really good with Jim Leyritz. What a great guy, and what a history he has.
Yeah, sure. It was great. I thought he was outstanding. Listen to some of the stories, some of, you know, what he went through as a player. But when you heard that, the end of the story, it tells you what a great person Jim Leyritz is.
Yeah. Offline, he did mention the fact that he'll never forget you pinch hitting for him against Mariano Rivera.
Yeah. You know, I got Jim in a trade in Anaheim. And, of course, Mariano being one of the great relievers. And Jim did not get off to the best start of that year, by the way. And so we had a chance to pinch hit. And I had one of the best pinch hitters in baseball named Jack Howell, who I pinch hit. And Jimmy didn't take it very good. But that's okay. You like players who want to be in the heat of the action.
Yeah, and he always did, it seemed, for sure. Now it's time for another Tunnel to Towers Amazing Hero of the Week segment. This week, we take a look at Pete Alonso's involvement with T2T.
Meeting with some of the firemen and first responders at the stadium, having some of them opening up, and whether they're involved in 9/11 or just anything else, it's a really demanding job, and it can be an emotional one. Whether you lose a dear friend or get seriously hurt, like, that's a way different perspective than going 0-for-4. As a player of the Mets, I feel like, for me, I have a responsibility to give back to such a strong and gracious community.
Pete, you did it. How much fun was that?
That was a blast. I'm just happy that I could donate 5% of this money to Tunnels to Towers. I mean, I have the utmost respect for the people that put their lives on the line every single day.
When we found Tunnels to Towers, it was like, this is perfect. This is authentically New York. It was a no-brainer for us.
I came from a military background. Both my grandpas served. I mean, I feel really strongly about people who put their lives on the line every single day. And for me, I think that's kind of overlooked every once in a while. It's something that we all kind of take for granted. Hopefully other people can be inspired to help out.
Our foundation will take this money because of you, Pete, and we can help others to make sure that when they go out and they protect our country, while they protect our community, and when they leave their family behind, that we are going to take care of these families. And I thank you for that, and God bless you.
That moment, so incredibly, like, heartfelt and heartwarming, and just seeing the good immediately right away and the impact, that's really important, and I'm so happy to do it. Heroes don't wear capes. Like, heroes are just regular people that just do incredibly exceptional things. Hey, I'm Pete Alonso. Let's go Mets, and let's help the Tunnel to Towers Foundation.
Go to T2T.org for more information about how your donation can make a difference.
We'll have another T2T Amazing Hero on next week's show. That'll wrap up another edition of the Terry Collins Show. Follow Terry on X and Instagram at @TerryCollins_10, and you can subscribe to this show on your favorite podcast platforms or on YouTube. Just look for the Terry Collins Show. Until next week, this is John Arezzi for Terry Collins. We wish the Mets the best of luck this week against the Phillies and their quest to get into the NLCS and World Series. Let's go, Mets.